This conference is being recorded.
Are you guys there?
Yes.
Oh, good. I didn't lose you this time. If anybody was on the first call, when I went to record, I lost my own conference call, and everyone was like, where did that go? So I'm glad we didn't lose me. Did anybody else join us while I was doing that little technological maneuver? No. Okay. Well, as I mentioned, you guys are more than welcome to chime in, not just with your little ring when your phones come on, but also if you have questions, this is a space for them. Or a lot of times people's own stories will be awakened by what's being shared. But to begin, I always like to start these calls by just taking a moment together to appreciate. And to let your attention come to the area around your heart and to take a breath in and out. We're coming from different places, different activities, going to different places next. And what we want to do is all just come together here and now. And then as you're breathing, I'd like you to connect with something that you're grateful for. It could be someone that you're grateful for, or an activity, or something you've read even that you're grateful for, an idea, a concept. I'm incredibly grateful for the tools from HeartMath that I've now been given the opportunity to teach on a regular basis. And they've completely changed my whole life experience from Kansas black and white to Technicolor Wizard of Oz. And so I love having these Monday night calls to be able to share some of the palette of color that the power of the heart has brought into my life, so that the possibility of that extending into other people's lives, whether it's you who are on the call or the people that you touch in the context of these little oases of positivity, as we've grown to call them. So to just take a moment and connect with something that you're grateful for. As Deborah mentioned, I leave for Hawaii tomorrow to teach there for 2 weeks. And I was speaking to a friend and a client this afternoon, trying to schedule a time for her, and she said, "Are you excited for your trip?" And I thought, oh, my God, it hadn't even occurred to me yet to be excited for my trip. I've been so busy doing other things. And I take it so for granted. I work there often. And so I realized, I started to take it for granted that I have the opportunity to go to Hawaii and be with the dolphins and be in the depth of the heart and teach this incredible material to hospitals and to individuals over there. And it's really, you know, a dream come true for many people, and myself included. And even with that, because of the way that human beings are, we adapt to things. Anybody who's ever been in a relationship knows that. What is exhilarating and amazing 1 week, 5 years later, is, oh, yeah, I'm going to see him tomorrow. And we start to take things so for granted. And so it's so useful to pause and go, oh, my God, I get to go to Hawaii tomorrow. Forget to do that, you know. So it could be something small. Maybe you're not going to Hawaii, you know, but maybe you had lunch today. And as many of you know, I work with children around the world who don't get lunch, who don't get breakfast, who are lucky if they get to eat a meal in a day. And so we could start there with just appreciating and not taking for granted the incredible food that we get to have here in North America. I mean, it's outrageous. You can get raspberries in any season now. So we could just appreciate that. And so I brought in appreciation of our food, obviously intentionally, because tonight's call is specifically about how the tools of the heart can empower us to overcome the stress of eating disorders. This is such a vast topic. I could probably have a call about it once a week for a year and not cover every facet of what's here to be said and touched upon. But such an important one. I mean, it's poignant that 30,000 children at least are dying each day around the world of hunger and starvation and malnutrition. And yet, even here where we have abundant food, there are teenagers and women and men of all ages starving themselves when there's abundant food right in front of them, and I was one of them. So what is that? That's such an imbalance, isn't it? Such a poignant imbalance in our culture. That at the same time then we have the highest rate of obesity in history. Mm. And that obesity has become an epidemic in North America anyway. And so we have parts of the world starving to death and parts of the world overeating to death, literally. And parts of the world that have abundant food in front of them and are starving to death. Does that strike anyone else as odd besides me?
Yeah.
It's touching. There's something very... I don't know if it awakens compassion in you, but it awakens a very deep compassion in me. This enormous suffering around our ability to receive nourishment as a race, as a species. I know I have a couple of Kabbalistic friends on the call, and the word Kabbalah, which is Jewish mysticism, means to receive. So there's something about this, about our absorption of nutrients, about our feeding ourselves and feeding our children, whether it's our children, our blood children, our DNA-related children, or the children of our human family. That's completely out of balance and that I have found the heart has the answers to. In very practical, physiological ways. I'm a little even overwhelmed myself at how much it seems that there is to share, but where I'd like to start is just by sharing a little bit about my own story. A very practical, humble place, which is both of my parents were over. Is that someone just joining us or us losing someone? Maybe losing someone. Well, if you're joining, welcome to the call. I am just about to share a little bit about my own experience of eating disorders and how the power of the heart helped me transform that. So both of my parents were overweight, and so their stress wore itself in overeating, blatant overeating as a solution to stress. So much so that if my father, who was a research scientist, had to write a paper for a scientific journal, his first step towards writing the paper would not be to get out a pad of paper and a pen, because now I'm dating myself. This was back before there were home computers. So he wasn't turning on his word processor. He was pulling out a good old-fashioned ink pen. But before he would do that, he would pull out a glass cup that I can still see in my mind and a tub of Dreyer's, or maybe it's Breyer's, I don't know what the brand was, vanilla ice cream and an entire bag of chocolate chips and go through them both. And that was his way of managing his performance anxiety, his procrastination, his stress. And so that was the role modeling that I got. And so I also saw my parents deal with their feelings of being out of control in life by dieting. So they were always on diets, but they were always gaining weight. Oh. And so as they were always on diets, Hinda, always gaining weight. Who is it?
This is Hinda.
Well,
I'm a friend of Batsheva.
Fantastic. I'm delighted to have you join us. Batsheva's wonderful at bringing her family to join us.
Okay.
I'm just in the midst of sharing a little bit about my personal experience of my own eating disorders and how the power of the heart helped me overcome those.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah,
I'm gonna
absolutely.
Okay.
So my role modeling was really that food was a way of dealing with stress.
Mm.
Whether it was not to eat or to overeat, either way, it was sort of the way to deal with stress. There wasn't role modeling that said, oh, maybe I could address this performance anxiety directly, or maybe I could deal with this resentment directly. Instead, the uncomfortable feelings were narcotized with food or with starving oneself. Although in the case of my parents, it was always with food, and so we learned so much by example. However, by the time I was 3 years old, this is significant. It would be very interesting to find out what the stats are, if that's a common thing. It wouldn't surprise me if it is. Their role modeling of constantly being on a diet had internalized for me so that I put myself on a diet the first time when I was actually 3 years old.
Wow.
And I remember it distinctly because I started watching my thighs get what I thought was big. I have no idea what gave me that perception, except, of course, we're inundated with pictures in the media of what we should look like. And there I was, 3 years old, still having baby fat, I assume. And so I was determined to lose weight at 3 years old. And that began the tyranny of my relationship with food. By the time I was 16, I was a ballet dancer, and I was so obsessed about my body image as the key to my success as a dancer that I was a professional ballet dancer, and I was working with a modern dance company, so I was rehearsing in addition to completing my high school requirements. I was dancing up to 8 hours a day.
Wow.
And I once kept that schedule, doing my high school work as well as dancing 8 hours a day, without eating anything except for half a muffin for 3 weeks.
Oh, my God.
And I was very thin, obviously. I was so thin that I'd lost my bone density and had a stress fracture from dancing, broke my ankle. And my menstruation had stopped. So I'd gone into early menopause due to starvation.
Wow.
And I started getting cardiac symptoms as well because I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but in the case of anorexia, when the body isn't getting nutrition from outside, it starts to take nutrition from your muscles, and the heart, of course, is a muscle. So heart disease is very common around people who have been in starvation mode. And so I started having symptoms of heart failure and heart attacks and heart irregularities by the time I was about in my 20s. And so then I went to, as many of you know, to Nicaragua when I was 19 years old to work with street children because I could feel myself so far out of balance. I knew my deeper heart was to be of service and to care for the world and not to be focused on what I looked like as if that was that important and not to be focused on, on this narcissistic mess that I dug myself into. And so it was very interesting because I jumped out of the frying pan into the fire. There I was with children who were literally starving, and I'd been doing this to myself. Rather than turn the corner and make me see that I needed to appreciate what I had and nourish myself, it added to my sense of guilt of how could I eat when there are children who are starving. So then I used that as an excuse to starve myself more, right? Because why? Because I had learned that that was the way for me to deal with my stress. And we'll look at some of the biochemistry that happens when you are in starvation mode and the stress that that creates and how the power of the heart reverses all of that. Because it also distorts our perceptions. And so I wasn't seeing myself or the world clearly. So,
can I just...
Yeah, please.
How could one think clearly if they're starving?
Uh-huh. Well, you can't. One can't.
It's impossible to function.
Now, I never like to give sort of... the word isn't ultimatums. What is it? There's a word for, when you know absolutely that
it's
true.
Okay.
I never like to give absolutes. That's what it is. You know, I mean, far be it for me to say that there are amazing yogis in the world or breatharians or whatever who, you know, have brought in a certain consciousness where they're nourished by something other than food. That wasn't the consciousness I was doing this from. It was vanity. It was insecurity. It was fear. It was guilt, and it was not knowing, this is at the root of it for me, not knowing how to respond to what my feelings were or what my feelings were telling me. And so one of the ways that I was able to numb my feeling was not to eat.
Could you say that again about
yes.
the fact that you didn't know how to respond to your feelings? And
absolutely. So I didn't know, I didn't have emotional literacy. I didn't know what my feelings were. I didn't know how to receive the messages my feelings were giving me. And I didn't know how to respond to that. And so I had a lot of uncomfortable feelings. Being a young girl, teenager, and being certainly in circumstances that I was in, living in a war zone, but also just living in the day-to-day war zone of looking at myself in a mirror 8 hours a day, trying to achieve to get love. I didn't know that I was the source of love. And so I was strategizing to get love in all different kinds of ways, and it was creating a lot of anxiety, and it was sourced from deep insecurity, which led to vanity. Oh, if I look right, I'll get love, or I'll get accepted, or I'll get the job, which will bring me applause and love and acceptance and so on. We all play this out in our own way. I'm just sharing with you what my specific examples were. And so not knowing how to respond to those uncomfortable feelings, one of the ways to numb them was to not eat, so I couldn't feel, and to focus all of my attention on the narcissistic vanities, which ironically, of course, would loop into more insecurity. So it never ended up working. I'm not inviting you to this strategy as a good idea. I'm just telling you what I did wrong. It didn't work. Because what I ultimately needed to do was discover a security within, an inner security that lies in the heart, where clear perception occurs. And where I was the source of love rather than desperately trying to get love through the approval of others and through outer world successes. I'm putting those in quotation marks. Is that clear for everyone? A couple of you asked questions. Were your questions answered?
Yeah, right. I'm just taking notes while you're talking, so that's why I'm not talking.
Yeah, and for those of you that are taking notes and so on, you can know that we are recording this call, and so you'll be able to go back and listen to it again.
Thank you.
So then added to that mess while I was living in Nicaragua, I got parasites and had all kinds of problems that increased my stressful relationship with food. And there's a gift in all of this, you know. I mean, here we are, we're calling this an oasis of positivity, and I'm sharing with you what is a very traumatic journey for me personally and for millions of young girls especially, but people all over the world. And so the beauty, though, and the gift in this is whatever your most difficult challenge is, and I do see eating disorders as a form of addiction, at least mine was, and I see addictions as a desire to feel great. That's what Fiera, the name of my company, is, feeling great. That's how we started the call, in a state of appreciation, which makes us feel good. And at the root of all this chaotic mess that I dug myself into through my own eating disorder was a deep desire and some knowingness that it was my birthright to feel amazing in life. And I had just associated feeling amazing to having a flat stomach and feeling light because I didn't know how to feel good. No one taught me that feeling good was a choice, not something I got from other people's approval or from manipulating my body in some way. Mm-hmm. But what I really wanted was just to feel great. And so that deep desire and that knowingness that somehow was my birthright to feel great and have an amazing life kept guiding me, kept directing me to keep looking, to not settle for this strategy, this addictive pattern that I'd set up for myself, but to keep looking for how do you really feel great? What is it that really, not just for myself, but for others too, how do we have what it is that we really want, which is receiving, which is nourishment? You see how I'd created a backwards association in my mind that feeling great would come from not receiving and not being nourished. And I hope this is helpful for some of you who have family members that are going through this.
But I see that you also inherited it. You didn't only create it.
Uh-huh.
You inherited it.
Well, we have examples, right? But ultimately, and this is again the power of the heart, the simple, exquisite power of the heart and the phenomenal system of tools that HeartMath has created to allow us to access that power, allow us to step into full and total stability so that we needn't blame our past for what we're doing now.
Could you just say that again about the past?
Probably not.
Oh, sorry.
Let me try. That the simple power of the heart and the exquisite and profound and phenomenal tools from the Institute of Heart Math, the system of tools that they've created that allow us to access that power, give us the chance to take full and total self-responsibility for our lives and not have to blame our past for anything.
Thank you.
Now, but I can't say that to a young girl who's coming to me who doesn't have that reference point yet, right? I certainly didn't know that when I was struggling with all this and had no role models. But this is the point. When you access the power of the heart, that's where your inner security lies. You become your own role model. You self-design your life, and ultimately that's the gift of eating disorders because it's the one area, well, I'm sure there's others, but it's a great area to force one into this cauldron or this birth canal of self-responsibility, because you can't cut an eating disorder cold turkey. That's what, in a way, I tried to do by not eating, right? You can cut alcohol cold turkey, and then your emotions come up, and you've got to deal with them, right? You can cut smoking cold turkey, but you can't cut out food. You need it, so you have to find balance instead. And there are probably as many people as have stomachs and mouths that will tell you what the right diet is. So you can't follow what anyone else tells you is right either because, and I don't know if anyone else on the call has experienced this, but when I was in rehabilitation phases, one person would tell me to eat almond butter and another person would tell me almond butter was the worst possible thing that I could eat. So you're getting contradictory information from outside, which can be bewildering unless you have tools to access your own heart intelligence. which is exactly what I was given. When I was 25 years old, I found this great place called the Institute of Heart Math, and I transcribed their research for them the first time I went up there to volunteer, and I heard my symptoms described to a T. And in hearing that, I had motivation to start applying their tools right away, and some very interesting things happened. And I'm going to tell you exactly how I unwound my eating disorder using their tools. Because I think it's very interesting, at the root cause of these eating disorders, the person thinks they're trying to feel great, but when you're starving yourself or overeating, the mechanism is not the feel-great mechanism that's driving that. It's the survival mechanisms of the body. So that avoiding eating is a natural thing an animal do when it feels its survival is threatened, right? My cat, every once in a while, likes to play Lauren Green's Wild, Wild Wilderness in my living room and bring home a gift. So this Sunday morning, he and three of his friends snuck into the house with a mouse that they batted around the living room until it woke me up. This poor mouse, I'm not good at catching mice, and so I called animal control, and they sent the police over. So a policeman arrived, but the police were afraid of mice, okay, this guy who got here, which was absolutely hilarious. There I am in my pajamas at 5 a.m. There's a cop standing there going, can we get your cat to catch him, do you think? So then the cop calls backup. So by 6 a.m., I have three police officers here with a stepladder because the mouse has crawled up to the highest shelf in my bedroom. So there's three police officers, a stepladder, a net, a cage, and my cat looking very smug in the corner.
That is so funny.
And you can see this mouse just shivering on the top shelf. Now, do you think a good meal is the first thing that's on that mouse's mind in that situation? It's not, right? When our survival is triggered, when we're in a state of survival fear, which all those insecurities and vanities and perfectionisms that I was struggling with were actually an expression of, a delusion, because as a collective epidemic, our bodies haven't had a chance to catch up to our technology and realize we are not mice cowering in the corner from policemen who are going to kill us. We are human beings who are living these lives where our survival day to day is not threatened by the email that disturbs us or the bill that comes that we think we can't pay. Mm-hmm. These things are not a direct threat to our survival, but our bodies don't know that when they get the signal from our emotions, and this is now starting to answer, what are our emotions telling us and how do we respond? When our emotions react to those things and signal to our bodies that we're in survival mode, that's when the higher centers of the brain that can perceive what's really going on shut down, and we eat compulsively or starve ourselves compulsively because it's a good survival tool. In other words, if your body gets the signal terribly wrong, then it will eat compulsively because it doesn't know maybe what's wrong is there's going to be a famine. We better stock up just in case. So it gives comfort or satiation to those survival centers of the brain. Or vice versa, the starvation method. I always had this feeling like I'd rather feel light in case I need to get away quickly. I don't want to be bogged down. Right? That mouse is not thinking about a good dinner. That's about the last thing on his mind. So is that piece clear?
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you.
So starting to work with the HeartMath tools, that first week that I was volunteering up there, started to shift my hormones, my nervous system, and the way that my brain was working so that it wasn't in survival mode, fighting for its very life every minute to minute to minute, but it could actually come present and realize there was no immediate threat. And so from that place, things started to change. For example, when you're in survival mode, Is blood going to your stomach? Are you guys still on the call?
Yeah.
Just checking because I heard some weird beeps and I wanted to make sure that Sheva didn't vanish again and I was talking to thin air.
You know, I used to go to a doctor who said that allergies were caused by a child having some kind of trauma while they were eating a certain food. Something happened in their environment that made them scared or something like that. So this fits in with what you're saying. That
absolutely, and we should really, we'll definitely arrange to have a call in the future, a Heart Start to Your Week call on allergies and how I actually overcame food allergies after all this with HeartMath tools as well. So exactly what's happening is when your body's in a defensive mode, it doesn't know what the predator is. It doesn't know what the threat is. So it's going to attack outward towards anything, right? Even if it's your bologna sandwich. Maybe that's the threat, right? So when you need to quickly run away or punch something to survive, the blood is going into your fist, not your stomach. So as I settled down from this constant fight-flight insecure mode, something remarkable started to happen. I started to get an appetite.
Wow. Uh-huh.
Because I actually had blood going to my stomach. And I started to eat and not get pain from eating because my body had energy to digest instead of just to run away from things. As I started getting nutrition, that started changing my hormones as well and changing my brain chemistry. So then I was in an upward spiral. Right? So that then I could perceive things more clearly. And then the heart tools, what they taught me was how to identify what my emotions were, how to recognize which emotions were accurate to what was going on and which emotions were triggered from either emotional memories or were old survival reactions that were out of date, like an old computer program trying to respond to a new, to the internet. Right? So I could recognize that, and then the tools taught me how to transform those things so that I could actually respond to the messages my emotions were bringing me rather than just narcotize them with starvation or binge eating, which I didn't mention that, but I was also not only an anorexic but a binge eater. So there were periods of time, especially late at night was a vulnerable time for me when I was in school, where I'd starve myself in school all day long, and the anxiety of school would bring me to a place where I'd get home and feel so anxious that I couldn't sleep unless I ate everything in my cupboards, and then I could go to sleep, but I would wake up sick the next morning, feeling ill from that, and not eat again all day, and then binge at night. And so when I got back to school, and that was a very severe addiction for me. And I do think that it was reaching a place, given what was happening to my heart, that was life-threatening.
But did you go to the doctor, or did you try to understand what was happening in your body?
Oh, yes. I'd been to many doctors. I'd even seen psychiatrists for the eating disorder. But none of it helped. They put me on antidepressants. Here's what helped. After I understood that my eating disorder was an expression of a survival strategy and that my perception of my body was inaccurate because of the way my brain was working, that gave me the power to do this. This is exactly what I did. When I got back from HeartMath that first time, I sat down with myself one morning having binged, and I was sick to my stomach in the bathroom, and I looked at myself in the mirror, and I looked like I was 80 years old, and I knew that I needed to make a choice. So I used tools from HeartMath. I went to my heart. I used a tool called Freeze Frame in that moment, which is a way of accessing guidance from your heart. And I went to my heart, and this is where the oasis of positivity is coming in, because this is really the good news, is that whatever our most difficult thing is, it becomes the leverage, it becomes the rock wall that when we have climbing gear, hoists us up to a whole new level of excellence and joy and beauty and exquisite experiences, that feel great Sierra feeling in our lives. And that's exactly what happened to me in this moment when I hit rock bottom. I looked at myself in the mirror, and I knew this was a moment where my life was going to go one way or the other. And so I got a pad of paper and a pen, and I came back into the bathroom, and I looked at myself in the mirror, and I wrote a contract with myself. And in that contract, I said to myself, I am going to eat in a balanced way throughout the day, and I'm not going to eat after 8 p.m., because that was my vulnerable time for binging. Instead, I'm going to do a tool called a heart lock-in that I learned at HeartMath. I'm going to do a heart lock-in after 8 p.m., even if it means I have to do it all night and I can't fall asleep, because I'd used overeating to put myself to sleep. And I signed that contract, and I dated it, and I gave myself 21 days because someone had told me 2 weeks before that that it takes 21 days to build a new habit. So I gave myself an endpoint. I said, I'm going to do this for 21 days at least. That's it. At 21 days, I'll revisit. And that's exactly what I did. Now, I couldn't have done that if I didn't have tools.
So you had already learned HeartMath?
This was a week after I got home from being up there the first time and learning the tools and transcribing their research. So, yes, I'd already learned the tools. I wouldn't have been able to commit that to myself if I didn't have a way to work with what was coming up,
mm-hmm.
right? Because as soon as I stopped using binge eating and starvation to narcotize my feelings, what came up? A lot of feelings.
But did you have, like, a buddy system, or did you have anybody besides yourself?
I had my heart. I had my heart. That was all that I had. And this is the great joy for me in teaching heart math, because I have people who are in situations where that's all that they have. You know, I work with Olympic athletes who are not allowed, obviously, to take drugs or herbs even, but they're also not allowed to bring anything except for their own body to the event at the games. And so in teaching them to access the power of their hearts, they access that which goes with them anywhere, anytime. It's the one thing, you know, the heart is the first organ to form in the fetus, and it's how we define death, isn't it? You can live brain dead, but you can't live heart dead.
Uh-huh.
So the heart goes with you everywhere from start to finish. It's totally reliable. And so that's who I had with me, the buddy in my heart. And so I did it for 20 days. I goofed on the 20th day, but by then, and I'll tell you this, it was amazing. I used the heart tools, right? I followed my heart. It told me to do this. It wrote the contract with me. And there were nights when I couldn't sleep, and I did heart lock-ins all night long. But amazing things started to happen. People that at my school had been rude to me or written me off were suddenly being very friendly and kind to me. What I realized is that I had been sort of like, what's that character it's like there's Snoopy and then there's the Pigpen.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm talking about? The character in Charlie Brown who goes around and he has like this cloud of dust around him all the time.
Right.
All those emotions that I didn't know how to respond to and that I thought I was narcotizing with my overeating and my starvation were just like a big cloud that was around me all the time, and people could sense that, and nobody wanted to be around me. Nobody. And so as I started learning how to respond to those emotions, how to transform those emotions, rather than narcotizing them with overeating or starving myself, the world around me started responding to me differently. And my whole world changed. People were kind to me. People wanted to be with me. And that started building a sense of esteem inside and a sense of security. It was a positive feedback mechanism where the vicious spiral down became a virtuous spiral up. And then this is really, I think, the pivot moment where things healed completely. And I was working quite closely with the freeze framer. We didn't have the M-Wave then, which is the handheld device. I was working with the freeze framer so that any time that I was tempted to binge, as soon as I would sit down at the freeze framer first and commit to doing 3 minutes on the freeze framer, which is a software where you can see your heart rhythm in real time. And as soon as I would get my heart rhythm coherent, the craving would go away. And likewise, I would have myself get on the freeze framer every morning to start my day at this time. And as I did that, I saw if I was in a starvation cycle or was tempted to go into that and hadn't eaten in a long time, I saw the incoherence it was creating in my heart. And I would do a freeze frame, my heart would tell me to eat something, I would, and I saw the coherence that made. So it had a mirror. I didn't have a human buddy, but I had a mirror that was helping guide me back into the heart. And I had no idea, but over that period of 20 days, I was laying table, and this is what I say to my clients that I work with now. You can't look over your shoulder when you're first starting something new to see if it's working. Because you're laying cable. It's like when Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone. It wasn't that he could then pick up the telephone where he was in Nova Scotia, Bedeck, the place in Nova Scotia where he invented the telephone. He couldn't pick up the phone in Nova Scotia and call Hawaii in that moment. Because the cable hadn't been laid for that, right? So each time I'd been going to the heart, without knowing it, I was laying cable. Laying cable of communication between my heart and brain, laying cable of communication to my higher brain centers that had been shut down out of the stress response for so long. And then remarkable things started to occur. And my favorite one is that comes to mind is, because once you're accessing your higher perceptual centers in your brain and your heart intelligence, it also gives you greater intuitive clarity, insight, and quality of life. So now we're not just focused on survival, but we're able to take in the nourishment of life at every level that life brings to us, in colors and textures and activities and in joy. I came home from acupuncture school one day this was towards the end of the 21 days, the 20 days that I actually succeeded at. And I was tempted to do my binge, my post-anxiety school binge. And I disciplined myself to sit down at the freeze framer for 3 minutes first, thinking, you know, then I'd get myself coherence and maybe I would eat, you know, a light meal, but not just eat my entire cupboard and refrigerator as I was tempted to do. And something completely caught me off guard as I did that. I built all this cable, and I started getting intuitive insight as I was sitting at the computer. My heart started talking to me like a friend. And this is what we teach people how to do. There is an intelligence in the heart, and that intelligence in the heart does communicate to the brain. There are more communication pathways from the heart to the brain than the other way around. However, when we're in chronic survival stress, that communication is disrupted. What I'd done was lay sufficient cable that I could hear what some people call that still small voice within. And so my heart said to me, very strange, right? It caught me off guard. It said, we don't want you to eat here. We want you to pack a thermos with your favorite tea and your favorite napkin and plates and a drawing pad and pencil. And bicycle two, and it gave me the store to go to, and it laid out for me exactly what to get. Salmon, chocolate cake. And then it gave me a map to follow of where to go, to take myself on a picnic. And I thought, well, that's very unusual. So I figured, what the heck, and I followed it. And as I got out on my bicycle, I had all those things. I'd been focused for months on studying for my board exams. I hadn't had a day off in months and months. And I started to notice the trees, the beautiful trees here in Santa Monica. And there's a street here that has jacaranda trees that bloom these purple flowers that time of year. It was the spring. And they have this wonderful aroma. So I was riding my bicycle there. I had this beautiful salmon chocolate cake feast in my basket of my bicycle, and I'm following this map, going to places I've never ridden my bicycle before, going, have I lost my mind? Where am I going? But I just followed it anyway, and I ended up at the destination, and it was an abandoned mansion that was overlooking the ocean, where I could just walk straight through because the gates were open. I walked straight through and sat under this glorious tree, and the sun was setting overlooking these cliffs over the ocean. It was a glorious, glorious sight. And I sat down and had the most amazing picnic dinner. And then I knew, I think that was the first time I ever really knew what it was to be truly nourished rather than to just survive. And to be making love with life, to be appreciating all the beauty that's right here in any moment for us to just pick like a fruit off of life's tree, rather than being so focused on getting love by getting good grades and getting thin and getting perfect. And from that moment on, my eating disorders have been a complete thing of the past. So I think it's, you guys will tell me, and I welcome your feedback, because we've created these calls as a public service. This time to let people know what's possible. And I've had the intuition or the sense that personal stories are very valuable for that. And so you guys can let me know if this has been useful. I really welcome all of your feedback and all of your questions, which will, you know, open the line up now for. And in addition, if you don't feel comfortable sharing and being recorded, you can send any questions or your own stories or your own feedback to ask. ASK at Fiera, F like fun, Y like yellow, E like elephant, R like Robert, A like apple.com. That's ask, like ask a question, ask at Fiera.com. And if you want to email me personally, you can send an email to Sheva, S-H-E-V like Victor, A, at Fiera.com. And I also welcome your questions about, you know, we offer the classes. There's classes coming up, one starting on, there's an in-person class on Sunday, March 18th here in Los Angeles, and then there's a telephone class starting on Tuesday, March 20th for the beginner level of these tools. You'll learn all the same tools that I talked about, the freeze frame tool, the heart lock-in tool, in the context of those classes. Which are level one of something we have called the Heart Mastery Program, which takes people through a year-long process of making this transformation, that the transformation from black and white living to Technicolor. So I really invite any of your stories, your questions, your feedback as well, if anybody wants to chime in.
This is Loetta.
Hey, Loetta. Yes.
Hello. That was awesome. I had to put you on mute because I'm actually at work, so I was having to make sure that I'd be available to my work situation.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing that. It actually is, I don't have an eating disorder, but I've got other things that I'm addicted to that I hadn't realized when I got on the call that it would apply to me. So I appreciate just being able to listen. And more just about getting in touch with my heart and listening to that intelligence. And I've really been focusing on that, and actually just with my breathing, not necessarily, you know, taking it to the heart. And I really loved the part because oftentimes I feel I really do feel alone. So to be able to just, I don't know, you said you had your heart or something, and it just so opened my eyes, like, that was a lot. You know what I mean?
Mm.
That really made a difference for me. I actually wrote that down. Because that's really who I'm becoming best friends with, is my heart. And I don't think I've even known my heart for the longest time. So it was just, it was perfect. Exactly what I needed to hear.
I'm so glad you highlighted that, because I do think that loneliness is an epidemic. We're living in, we feel so separated and isolated in our current, you know, the way our technology has evolved. So we're traveling in these metal boxes down freeways and living in, you know, separate and isolated from community. And again, the gift of that, this isn't a negative, the gift of that is that it gives people no choice but to find that inner guide within, in the heart, that friend that is with you always from start to finish. And I can say this, since I have really discovered that place in my heart, I have never felt alone.
Yeah, I get that. I get even hearing you say that made me, be aware of whether I was connected or not, or listening to my own heart or not. And I just say there was a peace there when I heard that. I was like, oh, right. Okay. And I mean, I'm learning to put my heart out there and taking chances, and so if anything, it's just me learning to be okay with taking those chances, that muscle, like you said, that cable would get stronger, and I won't be as afraid just to put my heart out there and be loving and be me, authentic and real, like you said in the email from last week's call, which I didn't get, but I am going to listen to. Just being authentic and real and vulnerable, that's like the most amazing, that would make me so incredibly happy if I could be there and be okay.
And you're doing it right now, aren't you? It's so great. Look at the beautiful cable you're laying, not just within yourself, but to everyone on this call and those who will get to hear it later.
Thank you.
Thank you for that gift.
Thank you.
Anybody else have any questions or anything they want to share?
Sheva, where is it? Is it on the website that says, you know, where these classes are and which ones are by telephone and how one connects to them? Is all that available on your website?
You can go to www.sierra.com, and there is a calendar of events that you can click on that has the calendar for the level one workshops. And then for people, once they're in Heart Mastery, they get a calendar of events of all the advanced classes. We didn't want to overwhelm people who are going to the website with all the events. So the level one workshops are all listed under that calendar. And are you on the emailing list, Ed?
I think that I am. That's how I get the notice of this call, I believe.
Great. So in the One Beat magazine that goes out, which if any of you are not signed up for One Beat, it's my free e-magazine that goes out every couple of weeks. And there's always in the left and right sidebars links you can click on. So if you got the One Beat that went out on Friday, in the sidebar, there's a link you can click on that takes you right to the flyer for the information about the Level 1 workshops coming up in March.
And is the Level 1 workshop, is that different than the telephone coaching?
Telephone coaching, obviously the workshop is done over the phone. It can be done over the phone or in person. I also do private coaching.
Okay.
One-on-one, and
right.
If people are interested in doing private coaching with me, then you can just email me directly.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That story was very, very moving and very instructive.
I'm so glad. Yeah, I think it's really important for people who have family members who have struggled with this. It can look so bewildering. And it's, I think, very useful to get inside the heart and mind of someone who's struggling with something so strange as starvation when there's opulence. You know, it makes me think about there's a joke or a story that's told that I absolutely love about a man who dies, and he's brought into this, you know, he comes to heaven's gate, so to speak, and he's walked through by his guide, and his guide takes him into this incredibly gorgeous, like, picture Louis the 14th opulence, you know, a room inside, or a great hall inside of a castle with a long table filled with all the food that you could imagine on it that you'd ever want to eat, everything, most exquisite, gourmet, delicious food in great volumes. And there's hundreds of people sitting at this table, all dressed in the finest gowns and the finest tuxedos, and they're all beautiful and in their own way, and yet, and so the man who's just died looks at his guide and says, "Oh my God, I made it! No pun intended. I must be in heaven." And the man, his guide, looks to the man and says, "Well, actually, this is hell. You might want to look a little closer." And as he approaches the table, he sees that while they're all wearing fine gowns and tuxedos, they're all starving to death.
Mm.
And they can't eat. And the reason they can't eat is because their elbows are locked. So they can't get food to their mouths. Right? They can't bend their elbows, so they can't get their hand to their mouth. And so the guide looks at the man and says, "Would you like to see what heaven is?" He says, "Of course." And so they walk into the next room, and it's actually an identical room. Everything's the same. Even the people are without bendable elbows. But there's something different going on in that room, and what's going on in that room is that they're feeding each other. They can reach across themselves and feed each other. And I think that was really a key part of the healing of my own eating disorders, is that as I got out of the narcissistic fixation on myself and my life went to the heart and became about extending the love in my heart to all humankind and to people that I meet every day, in the giving, in the sharing, was medicine. Was nourishment, actually, that then was able to replicate itself in physical, tangible nourishment as food. The real starvation, I think, of myself was the starvation of my soul when I was focused on my ego and my vanity and my insecurity and my survival and how was I going to come out and how was I going to look. And when I started to feed myself, you know, how did I discover HeartMath Tools? I was volunteering up there, transcribing their research for them. So it was an act of sharing that became one of the greatest acts of nourishment for myself that I've ever received. So I'd like to close the call tonight by bringing that to our awareness, just bringing our attention back into the heart, connecting with something from this call that inspired you or touched you or moved you, and taking a moment to radiate that out to someone that you care about, to make this an act of sharing, not just an act of receiving, because sharing is the greatest receiving. And to let that radiate out to someone that you care about that might benefit. Maybe you could invite them to the next call, or maybe you could just bring them your kindness when you speak to them or see them next. Extending your oasis of positivity that you are in your own heart to those who need it. And I thank you all so much for the privilege of sharing this time together. I will be on the call next week, even though it will be from Hawaii, Deborah.
Well, thank you, Sheva, very much.
Thank you so much.
It's great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care, everyone. Have a great week.
Stay on for a safe trip.
Sure.
Deva, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, good.
Let me just stop recording, okay? And I'll be right back.